Not just any feeling will do. Recent translations of ancient prayers recorded in Aramaic, the language of the Essenes and the Dead Sea Scrolls, seem to support precisely what the monk was sharing as the secrets of reality and healing. They also offer fresh clues as to why such instructions often appear to be so vague by retranslating the original New Testament documents, for example. It's clear that tremendous liberties were taken over the centuries with the ancient authors' words and intent. As the saying goes, a lot was lost in the translation. With regard to our ability to participate in the events of life, health, and family, a comparison of the modern biblical version of ask and you will receive, for example, with its original text gives us an idea of just how much can be lost. The modern and condensed version of the King James Bible reads, quote, "Whatsoever ye ask the Father in my name, he will give it to you. Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name, ask and ye shall receive that your joy may be full." When we compare this, however, to the original text, we see the key that's missing. In the following paragraph, I've emphasized the missing part. It simply states that all things that you ask straightly, directly, from inside my name you'll be given, so far you've not done this. And here's the part that was edited. Ask without hidden motive, and be surrounded by your answer. Be enveloped by what you desire, that your gladness be full. Well, in these words, we're reminded of the quantum principle that tells us that feeling is a language to direct and focus our consciousness. It's a state of being that we're in rather than something that we do at a certain time of day. So while it's clear that feeling is the language that the divine matrix recognizes, it's also clear that not just any feeling will do. Because if it were, then the world would be a very confusing place, with one person's idea of what should be overlapping another's very different idea. But the monk had stated that compassion is both a force of creation and the experience that accesses the force. In the deepest elements of the teaching, to achieve compassion, we must approach a situation without our strong expectation of the rightness or the wrongness of the situation's outcome. In other words, we must approach it without our judgment or our ego. And this appears to be precisely the quality of the emotion that is so key when we speak to the divine matrix in a way that's meaningful and effective. As the physicist Amit Goswami suggests, it takes more than an ordinary state of consciousness to make a quantum possibility a present reality. In fact, to do so, he suggests that we must be in what he describes as a non-ordinary state of consciousness. To create this non-ordinary state of consciousness, the Aramaic translation states that we must ask without hidden motive. Another way of clarifying this very important part of the instruction in modern terms is to say that we must make our choices from a desire that is not based in our ego. The great secret to bringing the focus of our imagination, beliefs, and healing and peace into present reality is that we must do so without a strong attachment. So in other words, we're invited to pray without our judgments of what should or should not be happening. Key number 10 reminds us of this. It states that not just any feeling will do. The feelings that create must be without ego and without judgment. Perhaps one of the best descriptions of how we experience this neutral place with no judgment is found in the work of the great Sufi poet Rumi. Through words that are simple and powerful, he states, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field." He says, "I will meet you there." How often can we truly say that we're in Rumi's field of non-judgment at any time in our lives, and especially when the fate of our loved ones is hanging in the balance? Yet this appears to be precisely the greatest lesson of our power, the greatest challenge of our lives, and the great irony of our ability to create in a participatory universe. It seems that the stronger our desire is to change our world, the more elusive our power to do so becomes. This is because our desire is so often ego-based. If it weren't, the change would not hold such significance for us. But as we mature into the state of consciousness where we know that we can change our world, it also seems like it becomes less important for us to do so. Similar to the way our desire to drive a car, for example, seems to wane after we've started driving. In having the ability to work miracles of healing and peace, the urgency to make them happen seems to disappear. This may be because, along with knowing that we can change our world, comes an acceptance of the world just the way it is. It's this freedom of having power without attaching so much importance to it that allows us to be even more effective in our prayers, and herein may lie the answer to the question asked by those who meditated, chanted, omed, danced, and prayed for their recovery of their loved ones. Although every act was without question well-intentioned, they often involve a strong attachment to having or making the healing of their loved ones happen. And that attachment was a belief that a miraculous healing was necessary. And if the healing still needed to happen, the implication was that it had not happened yet. If it had, we wouldn't be asking for it in our prayers. It's as if by wanting the outcome of healing, the efforts to create it actually reinforced the reality that the disease was present. And this leads to the second part of the ancient instruction, the one that's often overlooked in our efforts to bring miracles into our lives. The next part of the translation invites us to be surrounded by our answer. Be surrounded by our answer. Be enveloped by what we desire so our joy may come to pass. This passage reminds us in words of precisely what the experiments and the ancient traditions suggest in the shared wisdom of their time. We must first have the feeling of our healing, our abundance, our peace, and our prayers of well-being answered in our hearts as if they've already happened before they can ever become the reality of our lives. In the previous passages from the Nag Hammadi Library, Jesus suggests that those he's speaking with haven't done that. Just like my friends with the powerful medicine of prayer and good intentions, while they may believe that they asked for their prayers to be answered, if their asking was simply the words, "Please let this healing happen," then Jesus says that this isn't the language that the universal field of the divine matrix recognizes. He reminds his disciples they must speak to the universe in a way that's meaningful. When we feel as though we're surrounded by healing in our loved ones and enveloped by peace in our world, that feeling is both the language as well as the code that opens the door to all possibilities. In this feeling, we move from the viewpoint that suspects we are simply experiencing whatever comes our way to the perspective that knows we're part of all that is, and in doing so, we create a shift of energy that may be described as the classic quantum leap. In much the same way that an atom's electron jumps from one energy level to another without moving through the space between, when we really know that we're speaking the quantum language of choice and not simply thinking what may or may not be, we are in another state of consciousness. It's this state that becomes the pure space where dreams, prayers, and even miracles begin.